Righteousness is chapter 31. We are continuing through the book of Genesis. This is message number 32 in the series, entitled, A Time for Judgment. We're looking at Genesis chapter 31. I'll read verses 1 to 3 as we get started. And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. So chapter 30 continues the story of Jacob in Haran, outside the land of Canaan. And that chapter centers on conflict, particularly in two realms. So we had the jealousy between Rachel and Leah, the rivalry between them as they wrestled for Jacob's affection and wrestled for children, each one trying to gain the advantage over the other. And then we had the tension between Jacob and Laban over the wages for Jacob. Jacob even yielding an advantage to Laban in the deal that he makes with him, and Laban even seeking to further press that advantage. Now, theological comments, and we've talked about that as you read these accounts, you have these little comments thrown in, like verse 43 of chapter 31, and then like verse 22, God remembered Rachel and hearkened unto her. And you get those little comments that Moses is adding as he's giving this account. And those comments that are thrown in throughout the chapter show us that God is with Jacob, and God is blessing Jacob just as he promised. Now, when you think about how that God was evidently with him, how that God was blessing him, I'm sure things were not going the way that Jacob had envisioned. And I'm sure as he lay there on the ground in Bethel with his heads propped up on those stones when God appeared to him in a dream, and he had set out. And I mean, this was the place he was going to. He was going to Haran. He was going to try to find his mother's kindred. He's looking for a wife. But I'm sure that he did not envision all of these things that would unfold over the next 20 years, which is basically where we are now. But nevertheless, God was with him, just as he promised that he would be. And God was blessing Jacob, just as he promised that he would. And we find that God was even blessing Laban to a certain extent because of Jacob. And so this, of course, still echoes back, though, to Jacob's past. We can still see consequences. We can see some of those elements of poetic justice as he's sort of getting some of his own medicine, as it were, in some cases. Now, Jacob is not the only one, though, whose past actions are repaid to him. And this is, of course, that's a theme in the wisdom literature. Jacob's past is not the only one being repaid. And we see that as we turn now to this next chapter, chapter 31. And so here in chapter 31, Moses here emphasizes God's blessings on Jacob and his actions toward Laban. So in the previous chapter, we had, you know, these comments here and there, just enough to make sure that we're, as we're reading along, we're keeping track of the fact that God is active in this situation. He's not always readily seen, but from time to time, God remembered Rachel. God heard. God was with Jacob. God's working these things out. And so as we come into chapter 31, we find that not only is God active in being with Jacob and blessing him, but God is also active in repaying to Laban for his deeds as well. So if you think about the image in chapter 30, we talked about how it's centered all around conflict. And of course, conflict is just a theme that goes through the book of Genesis, beginning all the way back with Cain and Abel. But this conflict in chapter 30 was you can't miss it. And so in chapter 30, you have this family in conflict. But in chapter 31, we actually reverse that image somewhat, because in chapter 31, Jacob's family is actually united in this particular instance, and it's Laban that has a day of reckoning that is to come to him. So the hints of God's presence and the hints of God's actions that we had in chapter 30 become very clear actions. So we have two appearances of God in dreams in this chapter. We have the words of God that are spoken and confirmed, words coming from the Lord in his appearance, words repeated by Jacob, even some of the words repeated by Laban, words repeated by Rachel and Leah and so on, are all giving witness to the sovereignty of God in all of these events. So Jacob wanted to assure that his deal with Laban was fair. Remember that Jacob said that this, if Laban would agree to these terms, that this deal would show Jacob's righteousness. In other words, it would show that he was just. He hadn't cheated Laban in any way. He hadn't misrepresented. He hadn't deceived. He hadn't done anything like that. And Jacob obviously was one that knew how to work and knew how to manage and knew how to make a profit, as it were. So his deal with Laban was to be fair, at least for Jacob's part. And so here in chapter 31, Jacob is exonerated that he did stay true to his word in his dealing with Laban. So as we look at this chapter, we have two large sections, verses 1 to 21, where Jacob flees from Haran. He's returning back toward the land of Canaan. And in verses 22 to 55, where Laban catches up to Jacob. And so there is an interaction and sort of a settling and an agreement between them. So we want to begin looking here in this first part, where Jacob goes to return to the land of Canaan. Let's start again with verses 1 to 3. And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, Jacob hath taken away all that was our father's, and of that which was our father's hath he gotten all this glory. And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, and behold, it was not toward him as before. And the Lord said unto Jacob, Return unto the land of thy fathers, and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. So Jacob had worked and had kept true to his words to Laban with the deal that he had made with him. And the result was not noted, or it was noted in the previous verse at the end of chapter 30, there in verse number 43, talking about how the man increased greatly, exceedingly, had much cattle, and so on. So Jacob was greatly increased with wealth. Obviously, his family was also greatly multiplied. And so all of this increase to Jacob over this roughly six year span of time led to jealousy on the part of Laban's sons. And that's how the chapter opens. They were complaining that Jacob had taken away all this wealth from their father and essentially had left him poor, even though that wasn't exactly the case. Now, we've also talked about how, as we go through, that Moses emphasizes at certain points how that there are similarities in these accounts and the events of their lives. And so here we get a reminiscence of how that the Philistines were jealous of Isaac's wealth. And remember, they're stopping up those wells, and he had all that problem back in chapter 26, and particularly there spoken of in verse number 14. And so Jacob is now similarly enduring some of this sort of jealousy and envy because of his wealth. So Jacob heard the sons of Laban. We're not told how that he heard that or how that he came to know. Or maybe they said that to him. I don't know. But he heard the words of the sons of Laban. And he also observed that Laban himself was not as friendly to him. He wasn't as graciously inclined to him as he had once been. And we actually here get at the end of verse number 1, that word, he's gotten all this glory. This is actually the first use of the word kavod in Genesis. And I normally wouldn't even point that out, but since it has been something that has been of significance as we have been going through the Psalms, it is interesting to see. I think it's only used about 3 times in Genesis. It's the first time here. And typically we see it used much more later because it is much more used in association with kingship. But it is interesting that it is used here. It obviously it means It means a weight, a person of weight, a person of nobility. So what it's indicating is that Jacob has become powerful, not just wealthy, but he's also become powerful. And we saw that with Abraham, and we saw that with Isaac as well. And so now we're seeing this being said of Jacob, and actually the use of this term, kavod, for glory, that will again be much more prevalent in the later parts of the Old Testament. Now, we are not told how that the Lord appeared to Jacob and spoke to him until a little later. We find out a little later that it was in a dream that the Lord appeared to him. Here we just get the pertinent words that the Lord said unto Jacob, "Return unto the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee." So we see there's a certain parallel in these words, because Jacob is here in Haran, and this is where Abraham was. And God told Abraham to leave the land of Haran and leave his family and to go to Canaan, this land that he was going to show him. And now he's appearing to Jacob here, and he's telling Jacob to leave Haran and go to the land of his fathers and go to his family, and that he will be with him. So again, just confirming those promises that he had made, beginning with Abraham and now coming down to Jacob. And God renews this promise to be with him. And we've already seen a demonstration of what this means, that God is with him. He had promised to be with him in Haran. He promises here to be with him in returning to the promised land. And his being with him is what has kept him and protected him all these 20 years that he has been in Haran, and will protect him when he goes to return. Now look at verses 4 to 13. "And Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field unto his flock, and said unto them, I see your father's countenance, that it is not toward me as before, but the God of my father hath been with me. And you know that with all my power I have served your father. And your father hath deceived me and changed my wages 10 times. But God suffered him not to hurt me. If he said, thus, the speckled shall be thy wages, then all the cattle bear speckled. And if he said, thus, the ring straight shall be thy hire, then bear all the cattle ring straight. Thus God hath taken away the cattle of your father and given them to me. And it came to pass at the time that the cattle conceived, that I lifted up mine eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the cattle were ring straight, speckled, and grizzled. And the angel of God spoke unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here am I. And he said, lift up now thine eyes and see all the rams which leap upon the cattle are ring straight, speckled, and grizzled. For I have seen all that Laban doeth unto thee. I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest a pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred." So Jacob calls his wives, Rachel and Leah, not the handmaids, you notice, as again, they were not fully legal wives of Jacob. But he calls his wives, Rachel and Leah, and he's calling them for the purpose of laying out his case against Laban and his reasons for leaving to go back to the land of Canaan. And so as Jacob makes the case in these verses here, he's actually making the case that God has ruled in these events to protect and to bless Jacob and to punish Laban. And notice how that he puts this contrast. So he put three particular contrasts. The first one in verse number 5, essentially he says, Laban is not with him, but God is with him. In verses 6 and 7, he speaks of how that Laban deceived Jacob, how that Laban cheated Jacob, but God would not allow Laban to harm Jacob. Now, there obviously is an irony here in Jacob being deceived and cheated, but nevertheless, God turned it to Jacob's blessing, and that is the point that's being made. So even though Jacob reaped some of the things that he had sowed earlier in his life and in his actions, still yet, God ruled in these events to ultimately bless him through them. And in the third is in verses 8 and 9, where Jacob speaks about how Laban changed his wages, but God changed Laban's wealth to Jacob's. So the plain statement that God punished Laban for his treatment of Jacob, and that he blessed Jacob because of his promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, the point is, as we read through here, and we're now getting Jacob's testimony, he's giving his witness to the events. So we're not just getting them narrated to us, but now we hear them from Jacob's own mouth. Well, it's important to note that these are not just Jacob's thoughts and feelings toward Laban. And if you've ever been caught up in, it could have been some family drama, it could have not necessarily been family, but you've ever been caught up in something between people, oftentimes you realize that there is fault on both sides. Now, sometimes there truly is one that's guilty and truly victimizing another. But a lot of times in these sort of disagreements, you know, people have a tendency of seeing things from their own point of view and from their own standpoint, and seeing things and judging them by what is fair to them. And so if you've ever tried to mediate a situation like that, you know how that can be. But it's important as we read the words of Jacob here that we understand these are not just Jacob's thoughts. These aren't just Jacob's feelings about the situation. And well, you know, there's this and that. No, these are actually what the Lord revealed to him when he appeared to him in a dream. And that's when he begins to tell this dream. Now, the word for cattle that is used in here, and it can be a little bit confusing, the word for cattle here just means small cattle in terms of livestock. So again, it's not a word that necessarily would be talking about cows, and in this case, it doesn't seem to be, or it certainly doesn't seem to be the main reference. The rams that are referred to, those are the mature male goats that are referred to, and then he refers to the cattle, which in that case refers to the female goats in this case. So Jacob sees these rams, these male goats in his dreams, and he's seeing in this dream what was happening, so to speak, in the fields with all these multicolored animals that were bringing forth abundantly. We talked about this in chapter number 30 and Jacob's plan and all that. Well, the angel of God has appeared to Jacob in this dream, and the angel of God here being the pre-incarnate Christ. He says, "I am the God of Bethel." He's the pre-incarnate Christ. And the angel of God is explaining to Jacob the fruitfulness of those multicolored animals. And in his explanation, he is explaining it because of the wrongs of Laban. So in other words, now it's made even more clear, it's made even more confirmed that God was acting to take away from the flock of Laban and to give to Jacob because of Laban's treatment of Jacob. And this goes back again to the promise beginning with Abraham that God is going to bless those that bless him and curse those that curse him, which he confirmed to Isaac and he confirmed to Jacob as well. So because of this, because of these wrongs of Laban in his treatment of Jacob, is why the Lord is prospering Jacob and taking from Laban. And the last words of the dream that are given there in verse number 13 are that Jacob is to leave the land and to return to Canaan. Now, when he says, "I am the God of Bethel," essentially the point there is that he's the God that appeared at Bethel, not that he's restricted to there or that that's where he lives or anything like that. He has been with Jacob this whole time and now has appeared to him in Haran just as much as he did in Bethel. Now, this is the third dream in Genesis, and it involves no symbols. It has a clear vision. So in this dream, Jacob sees a vision of these goats in the field, which was something that was happening. And then there's just plain speech that's giving explanation and giving instruction to Jacob and making it clear. Of course, the dream says nothing about the rods and all of those things that Jacob did. And again, there's just a lot more questions about that probably than there are answers. But nevertheless, it's made clear that those flocks and herds brought forth of those multicolored animals because God was blessing Jacob and punishing Laban. Now let's look at verses 14 to 16. And Rachel and Leah answered and said unto him, Is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he hath sold us and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches which God hath taken from our father, that is ours and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God hath said unto thee, do. So this is where Rachel and Leah respond to Jacob. And they respond with, and apparently they're presented as united in this response. They respond with their complaints against their father as well. That Laban has treated them as more mere property. He sold us and he spent all of our inheritance. And you see, at least a portion of the bride price was to provide an inheritance to the daughter that was married. And one thing that's interesting as you go through the account is that it's obvious that Laban was a man that could be quite a stickler for the customs, quite a stickler for the rules, you might say, when he could work those to his advantage. But he also seemed to be able to easily abandon them when it was more convenient to abandon them, like in the case of what happened with the bride price. And apparently he had spent this inheritance and had not given it to his daughters, which he should have. So even here we get Rachel and Leah acknowledging that what has happened is the Lord again taking from Laban and giving to Jacob and therefore to them and to their children as well. So God has restored to them what their father essentially has taken from them, has denied them, and has given that to Jacob, and they fully agree to go with him. Then in verses 17 to 21, Then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle and all his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting which he had gotten in Paddan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And Laban went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. And Jacob stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward Mount Gilead. So Jacob loads up everything, and he uses the convenient time of the sheep shearing, which would have meant that Laban was away from home and for a lengthy time at the time of the sheep shearing, which I believe typically took place in the spring. And so he sets out for the land of promise. Now, Moses adds that Rachel stole the images from Laban's house. Now, on the one hand, this little bit of information is obviously foreshadowing the later events when she has to hide them from Laban. But the question that everybody has reading this is, why did she take them? What was the point of that? What was the purpose of that? And sort of the bad news is that we don't know. We're not told why she took them. And so we can't be entirely certain why she took them. And actually, when we begin to look at it, there are a number of possibilities of why she could have taken them. Now, the word that's used here for images is a word that is used to mean objects of varying materials and varying sizes and varying shapes. There's nothing definite. It's a very general term. And they could be used in a number of ways. They could be used for worship. They could be some sort of idols of ancestral gods that were worshipped, that were kept in the house for protection, that were passed down from father to son and that sort of thing. These could be images that were used for inheritance rites that sort of indicated the head of the family and the inheritor of the estate. And so they would go then from the father to the firstborn son sort of as a birthright. These also could be images, objects that were used in some way for divination. And we've already had this reference to this back when it was mentioned that Laban had by divination found out that God had blessed him because of Jacob. They could also have some sort of value, I suppose, depending on maybe the material they were made out of or how sought out that they were in different places. And so they could have represented a certain amount of wealth themselves and taken as a treasure. So when you start to think about what these images are, we don't exactly know how exactly they were used. We don't know why she took them. We don't know. There could be a number of reasons, and it could very well be that they were taken as a matter of inheritance or taken for their monetary value to be sold. And it could very well be that some other reason why that she took them. And so we're told that she took them, and that becomes important a little later on, but we're just not told why. And so then Jacob sets out for Gilead, and that brings us now to the second section in this chapter where Laban pursues Jacob and catches up to him. So let's start here with verses 22 to 24. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled. And he took his brethren with him and pursued after him 7 days' journey, and they overtook him in the Mount Gilead. And God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. So now Laban finds out that Jacob has taken off, and Jacob has this head start on him. But nevertheless, he's able to take his sons and his servants and so on, and be able to pursue at a lot faster pace than Jacob could move with his whole family. Though the journey to Mount Gilead from the area outside of Haran was a pretty long distance, I think something like over 300 miles. So they had made pretty good distance traveling in that way. But we also get here now the fourth dream that is recorded in the book of Genesis. And so God appeared to Laban and warned him. And of course, we see this in this an echo of the warning that Abimelech received pertaining to the wife of Isaac. So Laban was warned not to use anything, not to speak to him anything, whether good or bad. In other words, what the warning is don't try to bring Jacob back. Don't try to stop him and bring him back, whether by force or whether by persuasion. So don't say anything good or bad. So across the range, whatever sort of manipulation that Laban might come up with to cause Jacob to return, he gets warned in this dream not to do that, not to let Jacob go. And then we get verses 25 to 30 where Laban confronts Jacob. Then Laban overtook Jacob. Now, Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mount of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, what hast thou done that thou hast stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword? Wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me and didst not tell me that I might have sent thee away with mirth and with songs and with tabret and with harp, and hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters? Thou hast now done foolishly in so doing. It is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. And now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods? So Laban does accuse Jacob and charge Jacob with secretly stealing away his family. There's not a lot of substance necessarily to the charges. There's a lot of bluster on the part of Laban. He obviously is very angry with Jacob, but he also at the same time is restrained by the fear of Jacob's God, because he has been in his company now for 20 years, and he certainly, though he does not in any way seem to acknowledge and to worship the God of Jacob, but he does acknowledge that the God of Jacob is very powerful. And so he is restrained by that fear. And so you can tell that he's sort of stopping short, but nevertheless, he is angrily airing his complaints against Jacob. And he appeals to the customs once again of giving a feast and sending them off as though he would have merrily bid them a farewell and just sent them away with feasting and gifts. And of course, that's nothing but a fraud. He has shown and demonstrated that he wouldn't have done anything of the case. But Laban admits that Jacob's God appeared to him with a warning. And so in the end, he can only accuse Jacob of stealing his images. Now here they are called gods, and it is the use of the term Elohim, these idols that are referred to, which would indicate some sort of purpose of worship with them. The accusation, though it was made with anger, is one of those places where it sort of reveals the absurdity of idolatry. So if you think about some of the writings of the prophets and some of the taunts, think about Elijah at Mount Carmel taunting the prophets of Baal. You know, your God maybe he is asleep. You know, maybe you need to yell louder. You know, and here's Laban. You know, what do you mean grabbing up my gods and packing them in your luggage and taking away with them? Again, just the absurdity of idolatry, to think that this image, which had to be small, it had to be small enough that it could be packed away. So it had to be, they had to be something small. So the idea that, well, you could steal gods and carry them away. And it reminds us of, again, of those challenges showing us that absurdity of idolatry. Jacob responds here in verses 31 to 35. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, because I was afraid, for I said, peradventure thou wouldest take by force thy daughters from me, with whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren, discern now what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. Then went he out of Leah's tent, and entered into Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the images, and put them in the camel's furniture, and sat upon them. And Laban searched all the tent, but found them not. And she said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me. And he searched, but found not the images. So Jacob had no knowledge of the fact that Rachel had taken these images, and he bids Laban to search all of his property and produce the evidence that Jacob had wronged Laban in any way. Now, when Jacob speaks about being in fear, there would seem to be some real substance to that, in the sense that Jacob had essentially been working as an indentured servant, an indentured slave to Laban, in fact. And he had a very real fear that Jacob would seize his wives and children and property as his, as the master, and then just, you know, send Jacob out alone, packing on his own. So there was a good reason there for the concern that Jacob speaks of here. But Jacob knew nothing about these images. And Rachel, we find, had concealed the images in a pack saddle and sat on them, and so that Laban did not find them. And now it's time for Jacob to speak to Laban, to address his grievances with Laban. Verses 36 to 42. And Jacob was wroth and chode with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, what is my trespass? What is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of all thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both. This 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of beasts I brought not unto thee, I bear the loss of it. Of my hand didst thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was, in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from mine eyes. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters, and 6 years for thy cattle, and thou hast changed my wages 10 times. Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hadst sent me away now empty. God has seen my affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight. So Jacob responds, and responds with anger toward Laban, and catalogs his wrongs that he has done toward Jacob. So he describes his conduct toward Laban, the type of service that he had rendered to Laban in the 20 years that he was with him, and then comes back down to the end and acknowledges that God had protected him, God had delivered him, and God had blessed him, and except that he had done that, he says, you would have sent me away empty. Again, seized all of Jacob's property, seized his wives and children for his own property, and sent Jacob away empty-handed after 20 years of all of this labor. And not only that, but also after having these agreements with Laban. Then verses 43 to 55 finish out the chapter with this covenant between them. And Laban answered and said unto Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and these cattle are my cattle, and all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters, or unto their children which they have borne? Now therefore come thou, let us make a covenant, I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brethren, gather stones, and they took stones and made a heap. And they did eat there upon the heap. And Laban called it Yegar Sah. Hadutha, but Jacob called it Galaad. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between me and thee this day. Therefore was the name of it called Galaad. And Mizpah, for he said, the Lord watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives beside my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. And Laban said to Jacob, behold this heap, and behold this pillar which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness, and this pillar be witness, that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge betwixt us. And Jacob sware by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered sacrifices upon the mount, and called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat bread, and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning Laban rose up, and kissed his sons and his daughters, and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned unto his place. Laban was obviously afraid to do anything by force or to try to persuade Jacob to return or to try to take anything from Jacob. And so he asks for a covenant of non-aggression, if you will, between them. In other words, Laban is always trying to take the position of superiority in this whole dealing, but he obviously doesn't actually have that. Some of his words ring very hollow. Like when he warns Jacob against the mistreatment of his daughters. I mean, and Laban himself is one that had stolen their inheritance and had sent them out empty except for the fact that God had prospered Jacob. And so the account, of course, ends with the farewell and the parting scene. And then we will turn to follow Jacob as he returns to the land of Canaan. So as we think about this chapter and particularly as it's a continuation of the chapter before it. What about the zero-sum game? And we talked about the zero-sum game with chapter number 30 and how each player, so to speak, in chapter 30 was seeking their own gain with the other's loss, as it were. And it seems like that as we look at this chapter now that Laban had to lose in order for Jacob to win. So where does that put us with this zero-sum game? Well, Laban's gain it was initially Jacob's loss. Jacob served Laban essentially without wages, and he was earning that or paying off that debt of the bride price. And then later, Jacob's gain was Laban's loss as the strong and the good animals of the herds were slowly becoming Jacob's and greater than the herds of Laban. Now, Jacob stated specifically also that God had taken the flocks away from Laban and given them to Jacob. All right. So does that then make this a zero-sum game? Well, it still doesn't mean. When I talked about the zero-sum game, we were looking at chapter number 30. We're talking about God's blessing. And the point there was that, for instance, Leah didn't have to lose in order for Rachel to gain. And Rachel didn't have to lose in order for Leah to gain, and so to speak. So it still doesn't mean that God's blessings are a zero-sum game. They are not. God's taking from Laban is an act of judicial punishment. And his giving to Jacob is an act of restitution. All right, so that's not the same thing as a zero-sum game in terms of God's blessing. But think about, what is the punishment of Laban based on? What is the restitution of Jacob based on? Well, they're both based on the same thing. They're based on the covenant that God made with Abraham, Isaac, and with Jacob. He will bless those that bless them. He will curse those that curse them. And in this case, Laban had deceived Jacob. Laban had cheated Jacob. Laban had stolen from Jacob in numerous ways. And Jacob had actually acted true to his word in his dealings with Laban. And so restitution is being made to Jacob because God had promised to bless him. The point then would be that Laban didn't have to lose in order for Jacob to be blessed, if you follow me. Laban could have always repented and trusted in the God of Jacob. He didn't have to lose in order for Jacob to be blessed. And he would have been blessed as well. But of course, he did not do that. This chapter also reveals to us the true blindness and folly of sin. I mean, Laban in this chapter is actually upset and he's actually complaining as though he is the one that has been wronged this whole time. He is the one that has been done wrong through all of these events and all of these deals. However, as the truth comes out, he's wronged Jacob. He's wronged Leah. He's wronged Rachel. He has been the one who has been wronging everyone else. Now, he doesn't acknowledge that Jacob has been true to his word in the deals with Laban, even though Laban had changed the deals even after the fact when it was most advantageous for him. And Laban even acknowledged that the God of Jacob had blessed Jacob and had prevented Laban from harming him when he had the power and the motivation to do so. But yet, he still did not repent. He still did not trust in the God of Jacob. He still didn't trust in the God of Abraham. And so he was indeed punished or cursed for cursing Jacob. So unless Laban did repent and believe later, he will face a much worse judgment and punishment than just losing some flocks. And this is the same message for Israel. In light of that generation that died in the wilderness, that you, if you do not believe, if you do not obey, if you do not trust, you will die just as they did. You will be punished as well. Now, so when we look at a chapter like this and we think about, you know, various ways that it applies to us personally, this chapter is not telling us that God is going to punish every perceived wrong that we've ever suffered. Some people have a long list ready of grievances that they've supposedly suffered at the hands of nearly everyone they've ever known. And we shouldn't make the mistake of thinking that restitution means, well, their new car is going to be given to me. I deserve that car a whole lot better than them. If maybe it's someone at work and, you know, we're both up for a promotion, well, it's obviously going to come to me because they've wronged me. They've done this and that. We shouldn't take that sort of a message away. The message of the gospel is that all of our wrongs that we've suffered and all of the wrongs that we have done to others are righted at the cross of Jesus Christ. Think about when the Lord taught the disciples to pray. This is just a portion of it in Matthew chapter 6, verses 12 to 15. And forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. Amen. And then here's Jesus' explanation of praying, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. For if ye forgive men their trespasses, your heavenly Father will also forgive you. But if ye forgive not men their trespasses, neither will your Father forgive your trespasses. So we certainly cannot think that we've only ever been wronged and we have never wronged another ourselves. We certainly have. I'm not in any way trying to downplay the fact that we have all probably suffered wrongs at the hands of others to varying degrees, some to great extremes, terrible things in ways that they have been wronged. And we've all suffered those sort of things. But if we're also honest, we'll say that there have been some ways that we have wronged others as well. Oh, maybe not in this same way, maybe not in that way, but we have. And again, the message of the gospel is not hope for us that, oh, okay, we're gonna see, you know, our enemies stumble and fall and all of their stuff is gonna be given to us. Well, that's not the hope of the gospel. The hope of the gospel is that all of those wrongs are going to be set right. And Jesus went to the cross of Calvary to set those right.